next case on our calendar is 95-1340, State of Ohio versus William Paxton. Justice Resnick has recused herself in this case. We're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Resnick, Judge Roger Klein, who is a judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the 4th Appellate District. Welcome to Klein. Mr. Andrews.
This case involves basically two issues. One is the law of torture history of a videotape that was taken on January 15, 1991. The second issue is that the state believes that this matter is remanded for a new trial. The court ruled on the force on the fair, so he didn't rule on it, didn't consider when he first reviewed the case. The history of this case, I'll be very brief, but it is that it involved a solid waste disposal facility or a landfill located in North Toledo. And at some point in time, a complaint was made, and inspectors from the Ohio EPA and from the Toledo Board of Health went out there on January 13th. And with them, they took a videotape, the April 7th quarter with them, and they videotaped the scene as they saw it on that particular date. When Mr. Paxton was indicted on 8 counts of operating a solid waste disposal facility, that tape was a major portion of the evidence that was going to be used by the state. Initially, in court, pursuant to a hearing that was held on September 23rd, 1991, ruled in January 92 that the portion of the videotape was the videotape would not be admitted and that it was unconstitutionally obtained. State pursuant to Rule 12J then took a legal appeal and appealed to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals said that the tape could be used. And thereafter, the matter was set for trial on May 3rd, 1993.
We're familiar with the record. I wanted to ask you, first off, your proposition of law really deals with the standard of review.
Correct.
And actually the applicability of that standard. The Court of Appeals using that standard here. And primarily, it seems your quarrel is with the fact that the Court of Appeals did not review the record for potentially harmless error.
Correct, Your Honor. I don't think that they made that mandatory review with that in mind.
I understand. But now, I'm wondering if you have. It seems the Court of Appeals does use the language, after reviewing the entire record, they say. Is that enough to determine that they did, even using the standard that you wish to be applied? Can we find that the Court of Appeals did not apply that standard?
It would be my position that it is insufficient for this court then to be able to review that determination that you should at least use some type of findings of actual conclusions of law that is within other areas, and at least specifically address the areas of prejudice that have been alleged and say why the defendant was prejudiced thereby or why it wasn't prejudiced thereby.
Conclusively, statements won't do it.
That would be the state's position.
Mr. Anderson, this is straight down to go to the procedure in this case, but that's what bothers me. It comes from the trial court, and they appeal. And there were, two issues on appeal, at least the constitutional issue or the second issue? Did the Court of Appeals rule on all those issues?
No, they ruled that the statute was constitutional, which was the first assignment of error, and then they went to the sixth assignment of error, which is this videotape issue, and they ruled that it was wrong, and they remanded back to the trial court based on that, and then ruled the other four issues.
So that if we affirm this, there are two problems that I see. First is, the Court of Appeals has not yet ruled on the other four assignments of error.
That's correct.
Pursuant to our new rule in 12A, I suppose. Secondly, it is now, in any event, back in the trial court.
Correct.
For just one issue, or could the other four, or maybe even the constitutional issue, be relitigated on remand?
I guess, submit that the constitutional issue couldn't be on the basis of race judicata. However, I think the other four issues that were rendered moved by the Court of Appeals were significant issues that dealt with jury instructions. And this was a legal under the clause, Title 29, the jury instructions were contained in OJI, and so we more or less
just stop there, because that's the procedural problem I'm having. How are you being heard on complaining that there are assignments of error when that rule on?
Well, it's a matter of, basically, they were issues of controversy that were not decided, and those same issues are going to be raised again. It would be nice to know whether or not the jury instructions that we went through one trial with were proper in order to make sure that if we go through a second trial that they are proper, and at least have that be finality to this whole situation, because maybe there will be other issues raised in a new trial, maybe there won't, but at least if the Court of Appeals rule on the issues that
now, supposing that we remanded to the Court of Appeals to rule on the four undecided issues, and supposing they rule adversely to you on one or more of them, or adversely to the other side, does that make that a final appealable order? Does it come to us again as a piecemeal appeal?
Unfortunately, probably would. But
sure,
but
you draw your notice of appeal if they did that. So why not say to the Court of Appeals, rule on the four assignments of error, and then remand it back to the trial court for trial?
That's one way we do it. A preferable way, from my position, would be that, because I don't believe that it was prejudicial error in the admission of the videotape, that it was clearly harmless, that if they remand it back down to trial, or actually remand it back to them, they decided that they could bring it back up here again, or at least they even had this court decide the issues.
But the fact that you have argued now that the four assignments of error unruled upon should be ruled upon in the Court of Appeals, if we reverse on the real issue that's before us, then your position would be contrary to that, wouldn't it? You would say, oh, that's good enough. You reversed it, you have reinstated the conviction, and therefore, the Court of Appeals doesn't have to rule on anything else.
Well,
that's not fair, is it?
Well, I would say that if you're ruling on our appeal here on the harmless error issue, which was remanded back there, I think court appeals would have to, especially even if they said they couldn't on a reconsideration matter, and if they didn't want to rule on those issues then I think that it would be appropriate to appeal back up to this point.
And I guess that's what I'm trying to avoid, are the piecemeal appeals, because we're seeing one little bit of the case now. Conceivably, we could see one or two little bits of the case different than we're looking at now. And maybe the entire case needs to be considered for a proper determination by this court. Why, I guess where I'm going with you, why not just let it be where it is and let it go into the trial court and handle it through the normal appellate procedure once again so we don't see a piecemeal appeal?
Right. And I agree with you with the problem of piecemeal appeal, but that doesn't necessarily prevent that from occurring again. And I think the cost of going to trial, again, and trying this whole matter again without any guidance from the Court of Appeals as to whether or not the jury instructions were proper or the admission of certain pieces of evidence were proper, is really an additional cost that we're going to have to look at. Plus, the problem of then finding those witnesses again. Having the problem of now another 4 years gone by,
yeah,
the memory's fading, and whether or not we can actually get a fair trial.
It's one of our problems here, the revised appellate rule 12A. Is that one of the problems that we have because of that rule?
I think so.
That's one of the reasons I voted to take the case, because it seems to me we're seeing more and more of these coming up where people are saying, remand it to the Court of Appeals and have them decide on all the merit, all the assignments of error. Because we're seeing more and more of when we've decided on this single issue, everything else is moot.
Right, that shouldn't be done. I mean, I don't know how to make it to moot this determination, but it seems to me that this is a clear case where those clearly were not rendered moot on the basis of the criminal remand back to the trial court. And so we were somewhat at a loss to say, we're going to try the same case over again, right, the same piece of evidence, and the same jury instructions, not knowing whether or not we're going to have the same reversible error even after that point in time. And I don't know whether the cost would be worth having heard at the appellate level or even they have a whole new jury trial, which costs, I guess, the jurisdictions and the cost of witnesses and the preparation of that aspect. I think it would probably be more judicially efficient to have a court appeal here at all. It would seem to me that based upon my argument, my brief, that specifically say why there was prejudice, that they more or less made that assertion that there was prejudice, that if you really look at the entire record, that they were not prejudiced by the audio portion of the videotape. They mentioned a death that occurred, which really did occur out at the landfill, and I think that was going to be, had to be brought up during the course of trial because it was a 30-foot mound of what was called mixed demolition and solid waste material. That the person out there, Mr. Paxton, was operating a hammer mill where he was putting this material after removing valuable metal portions of this material and then grinding it up, and the kid got his clothes caught in it and got dragged right in there.
Are you now arguing the merits of the single issue?
Right.
Okay.
But the Court of Appeals did give a reason, didn't it? It said, I mean, it seems to me that it did, maybe it's not sufficient, but if several statements were played for the jury were either outside the scope of present sense impression, were irrelevant to charges pending against the appellant, or had prejudicial impact on probative value. That's, I mean, what they said, in fact, was that the trial judge can't just turn on the tape and walk out of the room and let the tape play for the jury, right? That's unheard of, isn't it? If it isn't unheard of, it shouldn't be done, certainly.
Unfortunately, yeah, it's not.
Was it prejudicial? That's the question. That seems to me they answer that in a fairly, I mean, it's fairly brief, but it seems to me they're giving their reasons.
Well, it seems to me that they were more upset with the judge than the courtroom than they were with the actual content, because if you really look at what they're saying, they're more or less just quoting the actual rule. They're quoting 403, they're quoting 801.3, and they're quoting the other rules, but they're not really specifically addressing the factual issue.
Well, but if you look at the allegations of the appellees, it seems to me those do respond to their allegations that there was talk on the tape about something happening off-site and a couple things happening off-site and this person being dying on the site, and that wasn't really relevant. It's whether it's garbage or debris, is it, or whether the...
Well, I guess I can argue that aspect of what's it off-site or not, basically because he owned a very small portion of land in the front of the area and he controlled the access.
Well, I guess which proves the point that the trial judge should have been there and been able to decide what the jury should see and what it shouldn't see.
I don't know why she left. I know that she had viewed the videotape and the motion to suppress, so she knew it was contained in the videotape.
So
that's maybe why she left.
Maybe she concluded it was all relevant in her own brain.
Had the parties used this scene before?
It had been played at a portion of a motion to suppress. We still had the opinion that it was...
Had anyone objected to the audio portion of the film?
Yes. Prior to it being played, the defense did object to the audio portion of the film.
Judge rule on that?
I think she basically made at least a preliminary ruling, although then she didn't actually sit and listen to it.
First, you get up in the middle and leave.
Right, well, the lights were darkened in the courtroom, so the TV could be seen better, and she said she was going to leave, and because we had a videotape, I think she indicated that the court reporter didn't need to take
with objections on the record for the audio portion as it was being played.
Correct. Right.
They object.
I think they preserved the air at that point.
Okay.
In the darkness, there was a voice of Jack.
No one there to hear it.
Right, but she had already previously reviewed the tape, so I guess maybe she assumed there was no problem with that. But that's not true. I don't think that caused prejudice to the defendant. And
that's your argument. That's your
argument. As friendly as that may be, the court still didn't do a 33E3 review. And I don't believe that there was error. And if you start looking at the totality of circumstances of the case as opposed to conclusory language that the court used, that this was not prejudicial. Further, it's a split verdict that we have here. I mean, if they were so prejudiced by all this information, they would have convicted them out of all eight counts. If this jury followed the instruction, and if you're going to basically not look at this issue, you're also saying that the oath of the jury had to really go in fact, and that they didn't follow the court's instruction. But they did follow the court's instruction, and that there was a split verdict, they weren't convicted out of five out of eight. And so we got that issue, there was no prejudice shown, and that the language that was used by the court appeals was insufficient to establish its burden pursuant to Rule 33E3.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Zimmelman.
May it please the court, Mr. Anderson. Your Honors, Mr. Paxton was charged with 8 counts of recklessly operating a solid waste facility without a license. Each one of those counts represented a separate visit to only.
Okay, so when we're discussing this and saying it's, the tape shows the fire and this and that, that, I mean, that's not even objected to. So we should only be talking about the voiceover, right?
Yes, but you really can't separate the two, Your Honor.
And yet that's the only objection. So we're going to have to separate them, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
So let's separate them while we're talking about it.
From that point of view, you're correct, sir. But as I will show you, as I will explain, while they're showing the tires, the comments about the tires is really what creates the mass prejudice in this case. We had a very strenuous objection and later moved for a mistrial when the court allowed the audio portion of the tape to be played. And of course, as this court has already noted, the tape was played in the absence of the trial judge. Now, I disagree with Mr. Anderson. I don't believe the trial judge had seen or heard the tape prior to it being played for the jury. In the record, the trial, when we raised the objection, the trial judge relies upon the prosecution's representation that the audio portion contains nothing more than present tense impressions. In fact, makes an analogy to a 911 call. It's right in the record. Had the judge been present, had the judge realized that we're not talking here in the audio portion about present tense impressions, but rather we're talking about highly prejudicial editorial comment, then I believe that the trial judge would have stopped the tape and we wouldn't have had this problem. And as the Court of Appeals brings out, it's a very serious problem when the trial, when an error occurs in the absence of the trial judge, which is prejudicial to the defendant. Now, I think it's interesting that
I guess we need to clear this up. Did the defense object to this tape in advance of the judge leaving the courtroom, or were the objections made during the playing of the tape in the judge's absence?
I believe both.
Were you there?
Oh, yeah, yes. We
okay.
did. We did object before it was played, and we moved for a mistrial after it was in reserve here.
But you didn't voice objection in her absence, did you?
I would have been silly to do that. Yeah. In fact, I'm not mistaken, Your Honor. She, the trial
judge,
excused the court reporter's problem.
Mr. Allen, let's go right to one of the interesting major issues to me. But for this evidence, would the result have been different? And I ask you that question because he was obviously operating this so-called landfill on property he didn't own without a license from the city. About, by the way, 10 blocks from where I grew up. He's in violation of the law, isn't he? Why shouldn't we just...
Well, no, Your Honor, he is not. Because what you would see, it's interesting because none of the witnesses for the state, none of the inspectors for the state understood exactly what he was doing out there. He was doing something unique. What he was running out there was a demolition landfill for which you don't need a license. He was also running a recycling operation, running it through the hammerhead.
Yeah, I understand all your explanation. You went into it in great detail, and it was interesting to read it. But he was doing that property that didn't belong to him.
That's correct.
Partially correct. In fact, that property belonged to the city of Toledo, didn't it?
That's correct.
Was that part of the charge against him?
I don't.
I didn't think it was. Okay.
Your contention is the result would have been different had this evidence not been admitted. Because that's got to be our test, doesn't it?
The comment, editorial comment on the audio portion of the tape was highly, highly prejudicial. And we have to stop, and when you think about the question, when I think about the question which you just asked, Justice Douglas, I'm reminded of the fact that the same evidence that we just talked about applied to all eight counts, yet this jury acquitted them of three of those eight counts. So it what was a very, very close case. It was a very technical case. Part of the problem was the state started out with a theory that he was burying solid waste at that facility. And then when it became obvious that there was no evidence whatsoever of that besides speculation by the inspectors, they then switched channels and switched theories and said, well, you don't have to bury it there. As long as you leave it there or you place it upon the property, that's sufficient under the statute.
With regard to the procedure, what do you think should be done with this case? Let's start with a firm.
That would be nice.
Okay. Where does that lead? Does that lead you back in the trial court?
That's correct.
Trying the single issue?
Yes.
Not the other four assignments of error?
Oh, yeah. The question is whether the state would have the same instruction.
What about the constitutional issue?
We would raise that again and bring it back up to this court.
Okay. Would the constitutional issue be raised judicata?
That depends what this court does with it.
What, on your 2505-22 appeal?
It's not even before us, is it? Will we dismiss that issue since it hasn't been properly brought here?
No.
Now, you don't raise it in the cross appeal. You raise it as an assignment of error on behalf of Appellee.
The cross appeal was dismissed for one prosecution, right? On September 7th?
Yes.
Yes. And that's the constitutionality issue.
Well, Your Honor, perhaps this would be an opportunity to explain what happened in this case. Because this may occur again, and the court may want to address this particular issue. Both our appeal and the state's appeal arrived at the same day. The state's appeal apparently was opened first. Our appeal was opened second. Someone in the clerk's office, rather than docking both appeals and consolidating them, which I think should have been done, took it upon himself or herself not to dock another appeal, but to send it back to us and say, well, we now have a cross appeal, and you should file under whatever the section is, which we did. Unfortunately, it was one day too late. So that's the situation that we were in, and that's the reason I raised the constitutional issue, because I think it should be before this court. That's the only way I can think of to get it before this court.
On the prejudicial the issue of whether or not you were severely prejudiced by the words that went with the tape, you say that that's clear, that that was clearly so prejudicial that you couldn't have your trial. Yet, was there a limiting instruction here about the audio portion of the tape?
It was a limiting instruction, Your Honor. It was not a very good one because it left it up to the jury as to what they disregard. And again, it involved an issue which was so very, very prejudicial that I don't think you could have given them an instruction.
Okay, it's still curious though that the defense didn't object to the tape, the visual portion of the tape, the video, was never objected to. So find this prejudice, we really are only looked to the words, and the words had, there was a limiting instruction with regard to those words. So that's what we're limited to, is if that prejudice and tainted the whole proceeding, or could it have been rendered harmless?
Well, let me just, if I may, Your Honor, go through, I don't know if the court's had an opportunity to view the video or not. Let me just go through the audio portion.
Well, we have it in the briefs. We know what they said.
Okay. If I could just summarize that. First of all, we have opinion being given without any qualifications, without any foundation. But more important than that, we have what the situation is that the EPA man is out there with his camera and the city inspector is telling him what he should shoot a picture of. And then he's making these editorial comments while he's shooting these particular pictures. He's saying, this is a sanitary landfill operation. All of this material is solid waste. We even have a situation where he zooms in on some closed containers and plastic bags and assumes that the contents of that are garbage and assumes that it's going to be buried out there. And when the hammer mill is shown as a reference to an industrial accident that resulted in a death, and I believe the most highly, highly prejudicial portion of the statements is a reference to a scene of what is referred to in the audio recording as a graveyard of tires, and you see these tires piled up on the ground, and as it turns out later,
don't object to the jury seeing those tires, right?
At that moment, we didn't realize that wasn't even on the defendant's property.
But there's no objection to their seeing the tires. That's what we're left with.
But we object to the reference to the graveyard of tires and that being wetlands and problems with the Army Corps of Engineers. And then, Your Honor, that last scene, we have this little stream, and we have a tire floating down the stream, and that's when they're talking about.
Sounds like an ad for Michelin.
I'm sorry?
Sounds like an ad for Michelin tire.
No, you know what it sounded like, Your Honor? Yeah. If you remember 10 or 15 years ago, that very pulling commercial, dramatic commercial of pollution, and then you see the American Indian Chief with that one tear running down the street, that's what it was.
And this was not on your client's property, as was your point.
Correct.
The jury was
not
led to, could have believed that it was.
Not only on his property, never any evidence produced that he was in any way responsible for that.
But you just said you didn't know that at the time of the trial that it wasn't on his property, so you didn't object to the video portion of the showing of the tires and the tire down the river.
That's correct.
When did you find that out?
Because the city actually brought in one of the witnesses, who was a surveyor, who explained where the defendant's property was and where the city's property started. This is just, they can land and has been a dump.
So did that occur during the trial itself then? And then was that after the playing of the video?
Yes.
Did you make any motion then for mistrial on the basis that video had been shown of tires and that no longer applied?
Or
you didn't move for a limiting instruction at all?
So the city dumped those tires there?
We don't dump those tires. I mean, this place had been historically, Mr. Justice Douglas instructed me, he grew up in Blacksburg. This has been a dump forever and ever. And it's anybody's guess. And we went into some of the historical facts. But no, there was never any evidence adduced as to whose tires those were, or in fact, there was one, like, another graphic video shows the chassis of an automobile with trees growing through the chassis. So obviously it's been there forever and ever. But unless the court has any other questions.
Just to be sure the record's straight, I said 10 blocks. It's exactly just less than 7 blocks.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmelman. Mr. Anderson, you saved a little over a half minute of your time. Take a minute.
I'll be very brief. I think the issue here is whether or not the defendant got a fair trial. Obviously, perfect trials don't exist all that often. If that was standard, this court would probably review a lot more cases. I think if you look at the facts of this case, that he did, in fact, receive a fair trial. Maybe the audio portion should not have been admitted, but the judge gave me limiting instruction. If you look at the evidence, you also have the defendant admitting that he had one truckload go back and actually dump the solid waste. So there was submission to all the elements of operating solid waste disposal facility contained within that transfer. The other thing is that this guy, Mr. Paxton, got the property that he owned back in 76 and 78, and he controlled the only access into this property, and the rest of the property is owned by city individuals or other individuals. We had aerial photographs to show how from 78 the landfill progressed and got bigger and bigger under his ownership or tutelage. And that these graveyards are tires. We were in the same area that he's talking about. He said he was on his property. Well, none of it was on his property. That's one of the reasons why he couldn't get a license to operate out there. It wasn't his property. And the only way that these tires could have gotten out of this property, I'm not saying that it was hermetically sealed, but it would have been through the auspices of the entrances that were controlled by the defendant.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.